This is the Legal Doctrine Theory, or Legal Doctrine Commentary. For more information on today's material, please visit legaldocs.org. This reading by Carl Manchester, 2006. Has a frog a soul? And of what nature is that soul? The impression of this book may be of the simplest possible character, such as a book of a mood. But that which is reflected down the multi-layers is a complex set of impulses, all clearly adjusted in such a manner as to withdraw the thoughts out of the way of the irritating body. The segments of the spinal cord, therefore, do not so much reflect the impulse it receives as give change for it. It is not like a bell which simply goes round when it is struck, but is its own local repeater which, on a simple mechanical impulse, goes through the complicated operation of striking the hour. And as in the case of the repeater, the motions which the cord gives rise are combined towards a definite end. As all these operations are reflected just as well by the segments of the cord as by the major nervous system, it is clear that they are reflected independently by the sensation or volition in the rest of the body. And this is confirmed by the analogy of what occurs in man. For if the middle of the spinal cord of a man be profoundly injured, his lower limbs will pass into exactly the same condition as those of the injured frog. If the skin of the foot be irritated, the leg will be drawn up with violence. Nevertheless, the man will feel nothing, nor will he be able to draw up the leg by any effort of his own will, still less to control its action when the skin of the foot is irritated. In other words, the segments of his spinal cord evolve in connection with his consciousness and his volition, and in the absence of evidence of the contrary, it may be safe to conclude that the segment of the frog's spinal cord is in the same position in respect of any consciousness or volition which the frog may possess. Suppose now that there can be another frog which does not solace leave the whole spinal cord in the body in natural connection with its nerves, but detached the whole brain, including that part in which the cord and the brain unite, the medulla oblongata. If the frog be laid on its back, it will remain passively in that position. If one of the feet be touched with acid, the leg will be retracted, and then the two legs will be rubbed together to get rid of the irritating matter. Not only so, but if the irritated limb is placed in an unusual position, for example, drawn up at a right angle to the body, the other leg will be gradually raised up into a corresponding position until it is so placed that it can rub away the irritating matter. Here is evidence that the spinal cord is not only capable of giving rise to very complex combined movements in answer to a perfectly simple irritation, but that it has a power of adjustment which enables it to meet an entirely new case, to solve a problem which could not have been presented to it under the ordinary conditions of the life of the frog. Suppose further that the head has been cut off in such a manner that the section passes in front of the medulla oblongata, leaving this in connection with the cord, but separating it from the rest of the brain. Then the frog's body will not lie on its back, but if so placed, will exert all those complicated and contracted movements which are needed to enable it to turn over. In all these experiments, the separated head will show signs of retaining all its nervous energies. And human pathology tells us that man's consciousness and volition may be completely
Thank you.
So we may not solely commonly be present everywhere in their bodies, actuating and arriving at the same time with all the different members. Nay further, when the fibres and threads connecting sensitive parts are divided, may not the soul still act in the separated parts, and yet become only one mind? A 100 years later, a Vienna advocate of Whitfield, Professor Fuca, deals very boldly with the question at which truth is tangled. He undertakes to show, quote, that a kitten, the spinal cord of which is divided, has two souls. For the anterior minority manifests spontaneous acts of volition, cries, runs, bites, and scratches. The posterior feels, walks, and moves just as one carrier. Although both parts exercise their nervous functions in a perfectly independent manner, the rational principles are specifically present in each, because these are nothing else than the functions of the grey matter, and the grey matter in each continues to exert its inherent powers. I must confess that to my mind through this view is the only logical one, if the hypothesis that the frog has a soul be adopted. A frog's head is cut off so that the section passes between the upper quadrant parts of the rest of the brain. The actions performed by the head and by the trunk will be equally purposive, equally show that there is something in each half which possesses the power of adapting means to ends in a manner which is as observable as the epithet rational in the one case as in the other. The separated head and trunk may be sent 100 miles in opposite directions, and not the end of the journey each quarter is purposive in its action as before. In this case, two alternatives present themselves. Either the soul exists in both cord and brain, or it exists in only one of them. If we admit the latter hypothesis, it follows that purposive operations may be affected by matter without the help of the soul, which is a practical acceptance of the automatic doctrine. On the other hand, if we admit the former, then either the soul is indivisible or it is divisible. If it is indivisible, it must either be a central force, capable of operating on the parts 200 miles apart, or it must extend over 200 miles. Whichever of these two alternatives be adopted, I am unable to see what aspect the soul of the frog differs from the matter. If, lastly, the soul of the frog is divisible, it must needs have extension, and so falls again into the category of matter. I have not attempted to discuss the question whether the soul of the frog possesses consciousness, because this appears to me to be a totally insoluble problem. Everyone will discover, if he considers his own actions, that he is constantly performing operations directed towards special ends, of which he has no consciousness whatever. And therefore it must be granted that it is possible that all the far less complex actions of the frog may be equally devoid of consciousness. Whether the